right, so now we are going to have a discussion on gravity at large distances.
Okay, so the plan is to first review two models that were somewhat popular in the last few years and tell the people what these models are, and then basically tell you why these models both failed in the end. So basically, I think the status is that there is no good relativistic consistent model that could do this, and that's why it's a discussion and not a talk. And so first of all, let me give you some motivations why the kind of things that we are talking about would be interesting. So what you're interested in is modification of gravity at large distances. So clearly, you know, one pretty clear motivation for this is we have an alternative explanation for the acceleration of the universe. Okay, so alternative explanation for acceleration. And the idea would be that what we observe is not really due to some dark energy, but due to some modification of the radial equations.
Okay. By large distances, do you mean large compared to the Planck scale?
That's a very good question. Not distance scales. So that's the main motivation. Of course, it would be great if we could also, there's not just dark energy that we don't know about, but there's also dark matter. It would be great if we could also do that. Okay, so one possible motivation would also be to try to explain dark matter. Yes, but this actually seems much harder. Cliff Burgess wrote a paper, explaining why this is so hard to do in any relativistic theory. So this is very hard. And the reason is that most of these modifications of gravity at large distances usually happen at some fixed scale. R0. However, if you look at this evidence of dark matter from, for example, rotation curves of galaxies, you find that the distance scale where dark matter has to kick in is actually not at a fixed scale, but it varies depending on the size of these galaxies. So it would be nice to do dark matter, but that's probably not possible. So that means that the scale where you would expect this modification of gravity to kick in would be above the scale of galaxies. So maybe horizon scale or somewhat lower than the size of the horizon.
Well, there is this Mond, right?
So there is Mond, yes. So that would be exactly to explain dark matter. Yes, but that, so that is telling you it's modified Newtonian dynamics. So what they noticed is that, okay, it's not at a fixed scale, but because, you know, it depends on the size of the galaxies, it's at a fixed acceleration. So what they do is they just postulate that Newtonian dynamics is modified at a fixed acceleration. Okay, so, and it's pretty successful, but I don't know any relativistic theory that would do that.
It's successful for galaxies, but not for clusters of galaxies.
Yes. Anyway, since there is no theory behind it, I'm sort of reluctant to discuss things that you just say that I think Newton's potential and modify this is in some.
There was some controversy about the success in galaxies as well. Do you know what the status of that is? There were papers by Mike Turner saying that it cannot work in galaxies as well. Do you know anything about that?
My information is like 2 years old, and then at that point there was something that was good.
And third motivation would be to somehow get closer to the cosmological constant problem. How this is done, we'll get to later. Okay. So what I will do is I will first talk about these two models that people have been recently talking about, and then Christoph will destroy them.
So there's another motivation, which is just, if it's possible, it's good to know about it, something. It's like another direction that could be much more generic if this kind of information is possible. In other words, we should understand the space of all consistent.
Yeah, definitely.
Whether or not it has an immediate application.
That's true. Anyway, so the two theories that we will talk about in detail are these models based on extra dimensions. And to understand the basic mechanism how these models would modify gravity at large distances, is for that we first review just very quickly how gravity is localized in the Randall-Sandrum model. Okay, so probably everyone knows that in the version, you know, in this Randall-Sandrum model, where you have a five-dimensional bulk, and you have a negative cosmological constant, so you have an ABS 5 space, and you have the space cut off by some positive brain tension here, then what will happen is that gravity will be localized on the positive tension brain. So you have a metric in some coordinates of the form e to the minus a of z, dx mu, dx mu minus dz squared. And for the particular Randall-Sandrum model, this work factor is just 1 over k z plus 1 squared, where this k is some parameter that is determined by the bulk cosmological constant, which is negative. Okay. But we will use the slightly more general metric. We won't always insist on having exactly this form for the bulk metric, for the warp metric. Okay. So the important point is that clearly in a metric like this, you can write down Einstein's equation. You can find out what the graviton modes satisfy, and they satisfy some Schrödinger-type equation. Psi of z equals m squared psi. So a mode with mass m satisfies the Schrödinger equation, and the potential in the Schrödinger equation depends on this warp factor a. So it's just given by v of z equals 9 over 16 a prime squared minus 3 quarters a double prime. And the important point is that there is always a zero mode for this. So there always exists a zero mode solution for the Schrödinger equation, psi 0, and it's just e to the minus 3 quarter az. Okay. And so the question really is not whether or not there is a zero mode, but the question is whether or not the zero mode is normalizable. Okay. If it's normalizable, then we will get 4D gravity on the Planck frame. If yes, it's 4D gravity. If no, we would naively think that it will not be 4D gravity, but something different. But that's what we will discuss is not always true. Okay. So how do you see whether or not the zero mode is normalizable? Well, so there will be this potential, called this Orfino potential. Okay. So the exact shape around the brain depends on, you know, how exactly you you smooth out the brain, but generically it's of this form. And what you will get is you will get a zero mode trapped here at the Planck brain. And so in the Randall-Sandrum case, you can see that the zero mode is actually really localized here so that it's normalizable by calculating the tunneling amplitude of the zero mode out of this volcano potential. Okay? So the tunneling amplitude for the zero mode to get out from this potential is zero. Okay? And that you can just pretty easily see by just writing down what the tunneling amplitude is as a function of the mass. And so that is given by e to the minus z1 to z2. If I take a massive mode in mass m, yes, then the tunneling happens in this region. So that's, there's a z1 here, and a z2 there, e to the minus dz minus m squared. So you can see the question whether or not this zero mode is stable, whether or not it's normalizable, really depends on how the potential behaves, not for small distances, but in the m goes to zero limit, in which case this integral will extend all the way to infinity. So the question really for the tunneling amplitude is the integral from z1 to infinity, the square root of v of z. Okay, so this is, it's really the very far tail of this potential that will determine if the zero mode is normalizable or not. And clearly in the Randall-Sandor model, we just calculate what this V of Z is, and I wrote it down as something like 1 over Z squared, so the integral of 1 over Z diverges, and the tunneling amplitude is infinity. So there will be a localized zero mode at the Planck brain, and at the same time, this will imply that if you take the KK modes that are coming in, the tunneling in and the tunneling out amplitudes are the same. So when you send in these KK modes from infinity, they will be extremely suppressed at the origin. So localization of the zero mode at the same time implies that the effects of these KK modes will be very suppressed at this point. So you will get 4D gravity.
I'm sorry, I forgot. Could you remind me why the energy was zero? There is a bound state in there, but why was its energy fixed at zero and not at some other?
Oh, so that was the question. Do you have a zero mode graviton? Yes. A zero mode means m squared equals zero.
Yeah, how do you, what determines that?
So the claim is that there is always a solution of this equation with m squared equals zero, and that's just because this is a what is called a supersymmetric quantum mechanics type of Schrödinger equation. So there always is a solution to
No fine-tuning in the constant in that equation?
So these constants just came from looking at this particular Schrödinger equation. So this particular Schrödinger equation always leads to a SUSY quantum mechanics problem. But it's completely clear, yes, because it means that you didn't, the fact that you can write your metric in this form means that you didn't break 4D Poincaré invariants. Yes, so that means that somehow there should be a graviton zero mode. The question is it normalizable or not? Okay?
I guess this mode is the rescaling of the coordinates x mu and x mu. So you can rescale them and this will be a solution. That's
okay. So this is how you can understand the localization of gravity in the Randall-Sandor model picture in some slightly different way than what you usually think about. So now the question is, you know, what happens if the zero mode is not normalizable? So basically the question is, what happens if this tunneling amplitude is not exactly infinity, but there is some fixed tunneling, a constant tunneling out amplitude?
I'm a bit confused as to why you're identifying the tunneling amplitude with the normalizability here. In the, I mean, one way to say it is just that you,
well, you know, if it's not normalizable, if it can tunnel out, it means it's not a stable mode.
So it's sort of the mode sort of defined you sort of define the mode everywhere, right? That is the zero mode. And then the question about normalizability is just whether it's, you know, square out.
Exactly, whether this integral.
I mean, I see it's very important in terms of what the massive, I think of, I mean, just have it is in my brain, I think of the massive modes, this question about whether the low mass modes can tunnel back.
But you can see that, you know, whether or not this is actually a mode that has a fixed norm means, is this really localized at some finite distance, or can it leak out? If it can leak out, it's not going to be a normalizable model.
They're different concepts, but they
give you the same answer. I mean.
It's not that they all give you the same answer, no problems, right?
Well, if something can leak out and the potential goes to zero at infinity, yes, it will mean that, you know, it will exist as a plane wave mode outside the potential, yes? So it won't be a normalizable mode.
Since you have the wave function, just
complete it.
But I mean, that's the WKB wave function, basically.
Right.
So the integral of that thing, I mean, so it's the integral of that determines non-normalizability.
That's square.
Right. But that's a two.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So they're slightly different notions. But I mean, because that is the wave function as well as the leakage probability, you can easily determine either from that. But you're right, it's not the same criteria.
Anyway, the important question is, what if this can leak out? What if this...
Right, that's not enough to determine, that's not the same as normalizable, right?
What if there is a finite probability for the tunneling amplitude to, for this mode to tunnel out, yes? So this means now there will be no real bound state zero mode. No real bound state. But there will be a metastable bound state. There will be a resonance in this way.
You can easily make cases where they don't make your hand. Yes. The information is there enough.
Okay, so if the tunneling amplitude is not infinity, then there will be resonance in the spectrum. If this is some constant value, let's say it's some constant, there will be resonance in the spectrum. And what you would expect is that if the width is sufficiently small, it means that its lifetime will be very large. So over large distances, up to some very large distance, what you would think is you would still effectively see 4D gravity due to this resonance. But after you hit its lifetime, you know, there will be some probability for the graviton to decay into closer plane modes in the bulk, and you would actually see some different kind of gravity at long distance. Okay. So this is what is called quasi-localization of gravity. So you can see that.
Is it massive now?
So it's massive gravity, yes, because the zero mode is not a local, is not a mode anymore. What really happens is that the continuum spectrum, so because we have infinite volume, there's a continuum spectrum, and the continuum spectrum will have a peak around m equals zero. So basically, what you're trying to do is you're trying to build up your massless graviton out of these massive continuum modes. Okay.
I'm confused about your nomenclature. Capital T is the tunneling amplitude or the time?
Tunneling amplitude.
Okay, so you want that to be...
If it's finite, then...
You want it to be non-zero.
Yeah.
You reverse the sign. Yes.
Yeah, convert it. Okay, that's right. It's the integral that is...
So what did you do to the graviton? Did you introduce some masses to all the components, or did you introduce a scalar piece?
That's right. So that will be a crucial question, clearly, yes. So that's what we are trying to find out. What is happening in this case? Okay.
And then why do you go this way? Why don't just take the 4D gravity and look at modifications that classify modifications that you can do to 4D gravity, which is
So clearly, you know, in 4D gravity, if I just add the master, I break general covariance immediately. Yes. So the hope would be by going through this roundabout way is to have a completely, you know, at this point I'm just pulling in tensions and cosmological constants, so I'm never breaking general covariance. So the hope would be that this is in some sense a milder way of generating a mass to the graviton. But like Christoph will say, the end the answer won't be, will be that it's not much better. Okay. But you understand why we are trying to go this direction, yes? If you just add a four-dimensional master to the gravity, a new general covariance and all health
solutions. Yes? It's a question of scales.
But so he will discuss that. So he will discuss that. Okay. Anyway. So the important point is there's a resonance, and so that means that in the continuum spectrum there will be a peak. So there is some constant here over m squared plus delta m squared. And if you now calculate the Newton's law for gravity from the continuum spectrum, this kind of peak in the continuum spectrum will actually give you 4D gravity. And that's pretty easy to see, because what you need to do is you need to sum up the exchange of all of the continuum modes over m star cubed e to the minus mr over r. So this would be the contribution of the different kk modes at the origin to Newton's potential, yes, so there's an e to the minus mr. If you put in this resonance spectrum, so you will get the 1 over r here, integral 0 to infinity. You get here e to the minus mr over m squared plus delta m squared. And what you find is that if r is much less than 1 over delta m, then this is still just going to be effectively 1 over r potential. And if r is much greater than 1 over delta m, then you will get a 1 over r squared potential. Okay, so for some intermediate distances, you will recover 4D gravity, and that intermediate distance is exactly given by the width of this resonance, and for very large distances, clearly the resonance will decay and you will recover 5D gravity. Okay, so this is the nice part of the picture. Now comes the ugly part. Okay. So how do we get a finite family number? Well, what we need is, basically, we need the potential to shut off. Basically, the easiest way to do it is if A just goes to a constant after some large distance, then V of Z, there's a shut off, and there will be a finite tunneling amplitude. Okay, so if A of Z goes to a constant, then you would get finite tunneling amplitude. Okay, so that would tell you that far away, you really have Minkowski space. Like close to the brain, you have anti-de-Sitter space. So you have a picture like this. And E is 5 here. So something happening, some intermediate distance, and then there is Minkowski space. The problem is that to do this, you have to have something with a negative tension, or some object that behaves like a negative tension. The reason is that usually A double prime has to be positive definite in order for you to obey the Dicke energy condition. However, in Reynolds-Sundrum, A double prime is greater than zero, in Minkowski, A double prime equals zero, so there has to be some region where A double prime is negative. So this is what was done in this so-called GRS model. This is a model by Rubakov and Ruth Gregory.
Sorry, I'm having a little problem with calculus.
It's A prime bigger than zero? You
want to I'm sorry, so what?
Is it A prime bigger than zero? A prime
So this is the weak energy condition, yes. This is what happens in ADS space. It's definitely positive. In Minkowski space, it's zero. Okay. So go.
Are you talking about A prime, the second prime?
So one particular way of doing this is going to ABS 5 space. You put in the usual Randall-Sundrum brain, and then put in minus V over 2. Okay? So this is the kind of setup that will give you, you know, asymptotically flat space. And you can show that, you know, in arguments like this, that you always need some region which is roughly like a negative tension object.
Yeah, your argument doesn't really prove that. I mean, it's possible to have a function which is positive and goes down to zero through a constant factor. You must be mixing up a prime and a double prime at some point.
I think in addition to a double prime equals zero, you also need a prime equals zero in a constant space.
That's true.
That's true.
So
then
I think a concave cannot go. A concave function then has to be convex on the conjugate.
What about E and Y of X?
Anyway, I saw this through 2 years ago. I didn't see it through yesterday, but it's clearly there has to be a violation, unfortunately.
Wait, this is supposed to be an argument that why do you need Minkowski's? I mean, people did this in ADS, license of ADS, all that. So there are some exceptions. What assumption are you
making here? I'm trying to connect ABS space with Minkowski space.
Well, why is that necessary for?
To get a finite tunneling amplitude, to get a quasi a metastable gravity. Yes, if you just have ABS space everywhere, yes, of course you can cut it off, no problem. But you're going to get just a localized graviton, and that's it. There would be a normalizable zero mode, gravity would be exactly four dimensional up to all distances.
He's trying to get a situation where you have a flat space on the brain, right?
That's right.
I mean, there are exceptions to this if you have, let's say, ADS space on the brain.
So if you have ADS space on the brain, it's possible. Yes. But then it will, then at long distances, it will really be the ADS nature of the brain that will dominate gravity and not the modification, okay? So yeah, I agree. So that is the Scarf-Crandall type thing, if that's what you mean.
Yeah.
That's right. So, but then at large distances, all you will see is the ADS nature of the brain and not, you know, some weird modification of gravity. Okay? So, I agree. Okay, I didn't understand where you were driving me. Okay.
One objection to this kind of idea when you might imagine this is that if you imagine it from the ADS side, right, mm-hmm. and you raise the temperature a little bit,
yes.
so a black hole horizon will form and will cover all the region that is to the right of that region. So you would think it would be funny that what is on the right of that region really is poison.
What was the last thing you said?
If you raise a little bit the temperature, you get rid of what is to the right of that region.
Yeah.
It is surprising that the fact that there is that thing to the right really has a modification in the physics.
I see. Because
is that linked to the fact that it's a low energy? So it's it's a long wavelength modification.
This long wavelength is extremely long. So it's even longer than the temperature of the universe, let's say. I mean, a temperature of the universe of the order of 1 over the Hubble scale today would do that, I should say.
So that says that the geometry is sort of unstable to polarize and polarize.
Right, that's right.
Because what if you had a baby universe covered by a horizon from the point of view of the main universe? I mean, that's also kind of similar. Things going on the other side.
Yeah.
So is that ruled out? I mean,
it's not a strong argument.
There will be a bigger problem than you see here.
That's also a problem connected to this requirement that you have negative potential.
That might be related to that. Well, I mean, as said, you can avoid this in ADS space, but what I just said cannot be avoided in ADS space. So clearly, at least, I don't see why you wouldn't have something with negative curvature and horizon.
Anyway, there will be a bigger problem to this particular setup here. But the two main questions are, two questions that you should ask immediately is, because, like Henry says, the graviton is made out of a resonance of the continuum massive gravitons. Question is gravity really 4D, Einstein gravity in this case? In the sense that massive graviton has 5 polarizations, massless has 3, and the m goes to 0 limit of the massive polarization doesn't give you the massless graviton. And Christoph will talk much more about that. This is this so-called Van Damme-Beltman-Zaharov discontinuity. So the scalar doesn't decouple from the massive graviton. Okay. So that's one crucial question. And the other is, well, I have a negative tension brain. It's not at an orbifold fixed point. What is the instability? Okay. So people first thought that, well, this will never give you really 4D Einstein gravity because of this issue with the polarizations, but that is clearly not the right statement. It will give you 4D Einstein gravity, and that's very easy to see just from the fact that we know that an anti-de Sitter space around the positive tension brain is going to give you 4D Einstein gravity from Randall syndrome, and if we take distances such that the graviton didn't have time to probe the region of the negative tension brain, you know, clearly this cannot play any possible role. So the answer is yes, it is 4D gravity. People can do a big calculation with brain bendings, etc., but the answer is it is 4D gravity. But then the question is, how is it possibly 4D gravity if we said that the graviton is made out of massive gravitons which have this extra polarization that doesn't decouple, so there must be a ghost-like mode that cancels exactly the contribution of the extra polarization. And the presence of this ghost-like mode is exactly due to this instability that is introduced by this negative tension brain. So what people did in the end is they calculated the kinetic term for the radion. So there is an extra scalar mode here due to the fact that I have two brains separated by a finite distance, and turns out that the kinetic term for this radion really has their own sign. And that's what makes it possible for gravity to be exactly 4D Einstein gravity. There is this extra mode that exactly cancels over intermediate distances the effect of the extra polarization, but then over large distances, this will dominate them.
So, more recently, like Arkanian and Schwartz and Jordan, mm-hmm. had this analysis where they showed that it can be perfectly consistent. You add back the constant loads that are better,
people talk about it
consistent.
But then the question is the strong coupling.
Yeah.
So that was part of this discussion.
So it can be perfectly consistent, it's just the scales don't work out.
Well, that's not true, yes. I mean, it's still not 4D gravity. It still doesn't decouple. The extra polarization still doesn't decouple without the ghost. So the question is, okay, so you will discuss that in detail.
Could you explain a little more the negative kinetic term? Usually I think of it as scalar field of instability. R is a field on V, on V or on?
Well, R is a component of the bulk metric, is a mode of the bulk metric.
So,
it's a scalar extension.
Why is the tension in front of everything?
Well, I mean, it is coupled to...
A positive tension and a negative tension.
So here there is a positive tension, here there is a negative tension. Yeah. And it's coupled to both of them.
Yeah.
Through the tension.
So what? So V over 2 is smaller than V. Why does one beat the other?
Well, the coupling is not something that affects the kinetic term.
Well, in fact, you see, the point is that, okay, so that's a good question. If you just generically think about these radions in Randall's syndrome model, what happens is that most modes are actually exponentially peaked away from the Planck brain. So the coupling to the positive tension is much, much smaller than the coupling to the negative tension due to the wave function being peaked on this other brain. Okay? So that's probably the wrong physical picture. Okay, so we understand that this model is for the gravity, but it has an instability.
How does the counting work? Don't you need more than one?
Well, there is the extra, so the 5 polarizations are the 2 gravitons, the scalar, plus there is a vector. Mm-hmm. But the vector doesn't couple to a surface, so it's really the scalar that causes the discovery.
Oh, you say the vector naturally decouples.
Yeah, the vector doesn't couple. Okay, so this model is interesting, but far from being self-consistent. So the next step is to see what happens in this model at very large distances. How could I also have described this model at large distances? Well, string theorists have taught us about holographic RGE. So what you can do is you can look at this brain at the correlators on the Planck brain at large distances, and then the details around the brain are not going to matter. So what you can do is you can integrate out a slice of the bulk around the brain and replace it with an effective brain with a different tension, the different induced kinetic term. Okay. So if you look at this GRS model at large distances and you integrate out the bulk all the way between the Planck brain and this negative tension brain, what you're going to find is, well, once I integrated out the whole distance between them, the effective tension is just going to be zero. So what you will find is, we'll find the tensionless brain, so V equals zero, Minkowski space here, so lambda equals zero here, but in order to reproduce the low energy behavior of this GRS model, there has to be some induced four-dimensional kinetic term on this brain. Okay. And of course, there would be the ghost also localized on this brain. Okay. So this is basically the same picture, except you look at it from far away, you find induced, large induced kinetic term, and a Minkowski space around it. So this model, if you just throw away the ghost, is called this BGP model, modeled by Dvalik, Gavadadze, and Karate. So they have proposed to say that, okay, I can find a resonance in another way, just throw away the ghost, just take a tensionless brain in Minkowski space, put a large induced kinetic term on this tensionless brain, and have some small bulk cosmological, some much smaller bulk Planck scale.
Why do you need the brain to be tensionless? I mean, tension.
I'm sorry. Why? Well, if it's yes, then it wouldn't be Minkowski's space.
How did you throw it?
So this is just a different model. Yes. So this is now. So now the problem is that there will still be a resonance, but without the ghost, you would not have the cancellation of the extra polarization. Okay.
But why? I'm still confused by Milan's question. You just have a brain in flat space, and it can be flat, and have Minkowski.
can be.
Yes.
But if it has a tension, yes.
That's like an effect of 40,000 watts.
It's like a, yeah.
I think what he's saying is it's harder to analyze the model. It's not that this.
Okay. Anyway, so, but in this model, you can easily see that there, you would get some really interesting cosmological solutions. So here you can easily see how you would get the kind of cosmological solutions that would correspond to some modification of Friedman equation at large distances. This was derived by Defay. The point is that at the moment when there is an expansion of the, something made, starts making the universe expand, this will feed into this four-dimensional curvature term, and the bulk will see like an effective energy density on the brain. So at the moment when you have some expansion, this expansion can be self-sustained even without matter on the brain. What is called a self-inflating solution. So I will not go into the detail of the derivation, I will just tell you what the Friedman equation would look like.
Sorry, from the higher dimensional point of view, how does the solution look like?
You are asking me how the what the wave function away from the brain is of the, what A of Y is. Yes, there's an A of T and Y.
Right.
I don't know. Here, do you remember how the scale factor changes away from the brain?
That's a little surprising. You have a brain sitting there and it's expanding just.
Well, clearly the whole space is expanding.
Are you in the five-dimensional body?
Yeah, the bulk is also expanding. So the effective part, the effective Friedman equation will have an extra term, 0.03, and this means that for large energy densities, this term is negligible, you just get the ordinary Friedman equation, but for small energy densities, if you pick the right sign here, and that's your choice, both of them are solutions, then you can just have an equation there, h squared equals h over r0, and this r0 is some characteristic scale that is set by the ratio of these 5D Planck scale and 4D Planck scale. Okay, so I guess Christoph will take over from here. He will explain much more about this r0 and what the problem with this model is in the end.
Maybe if we start by discussing a little bit about four-dimensional massive gravity, and then I will go into this DGP model in more detail, because there is a connection between four-dimensional massive gravity and this model, which is the effective action of this model. So maybe it's better if I start by massive gravity in four dimensions. So we can ask ourselves what is happening at the quantum level if I add a mass to the graviton. So just like in gauge theory, neutral gauge theory, if I add by hand a mass to the gauge boson, then I will generate some strong coupling at a given energy, which is basically, if I add a mass to the W boson by hand, generally I will get at the cutoff for my theory, which is given by the mass divided by the gauge coupling. So now I would like to do the same thing for gravity. So I add by n the mass to the graviton, and then try to identify this cutoff scaling. So the action that I will take is just the usual Einstein action. And then I will add by n the mass for the graviton. So I will discuss a little bit later why I need to introduce the mass in this particular form, and this is just particular combination of h nu nu squared minus the trace of h squared. So a priori, I can introduce some other linear combination of those two objects, but then I will see later that this will lead to some ghost into the theory. So I really need to introduce this polyfield mass term in order to avoid any ghost in the theory. So if h is just a perturbation around the Minkowski background, the metric g minimum is eta unit. So the way usually you identify this tropping scale in the theory is just by identifying the scattering of the longitudinal mode for the gauge boson, something like that. And then you just look at the scattering of the longitudinal component. And usually an effective way to see this strong coupling scale is just by using the equivalence theorem, so just looking actually at the scattering of the ghost and boson, which just represents the longitudinal component of the W. So just consider the ghost and boson here. So I would like here to reproduce this analysis, introduce some ghost on mode for the graviton, and look at the scattering of those ghost on mode. So in order to introduce this ghost on mode, I will just actually introduce a kind of fake gauge invariance by just replacing this h mu nu by h mu nu plus d nu by nu. Pi mu. So in a gauge where pi mu equals zero, this is the equivalent just of the unitary gauge where all the components of the graviton, where h contains also the longitudinal mode for the graviton. But I can also go into another gauge where pi mu is different than zero, where in this case I will find a kind of nice propagator for my pi. So in this formalism, I have a new gauge invariance, which is just h mu nu transforming in the usual way, mu, but I also need to transform the pi, so p pi mu. So this is clearly an invariance of this action here. Because of course Einstein action is invariant under this transformation, and then I include the pion in order to make the polyfield mass invariant under it. So now I can just rewrite this action in terms of my pion. So this will give me just the kinetic term for the graviton, as usual. T squared h squared. And then I have this F to 4 and h squared, where h is just this right here. So I have a term which is h squared. But for the moment, I won't. Looking at the structure of this closed term. Then I have a mixing between h and pi. H pi factor 2. And then I have this kinetic term for the pi, which is just t pi nu plus t pi nu squared minus. So you can just integrate by part one of this term, and this will exactly rewrite the more usual form. And here you exactly recognize the kinetic term for a gauge volume for vector. And this is
is really due to the fact that I've chosen this particular combination, which allows me to find this particular combination of the fields, right, of the collector. So the point is that if I don't choose this linear combination, then in this case, I will have a ghost at this point here. So then, the point that this term is a nice kinetic term for the vector field, except for one guy that doesn't have a kinetic term, which is just pi mu equals d mu, the scalar field. That clearly, since this f mu mu is invariant under this kind of gauge transformation, then I won't have the kinetic term for this scalar field. So in this sense, this is a problem that I have a mode, a scalar mode, that doesn't have a kinetic term. I'm looking only at this. But actually what will happen is that this scalar field here will pick up the kinetic term by mixing with the graviton. So how it will work is just that, in a sense, it's a kind of a seesaw kinetic mixing between the graviton and the scalar field here. So how it works, just like this, we have the kinetic term for H, and then we have this mixing. Then I can diagonalize this kinetic term. In this sense, this will be the new graviton H data, and in this case, I have generated a kinetic term for my scalar field here. But the point is that this kinetic term doesn't survive when gravity decouples. When M count is set to infinity, then this term here just goes to zero. And this is different than in the gauge theory case, where the pion survive even when my pion gets a kinetic term, even when the gauge coupling is sent to zero. So this is the main difference between gravity and gauge theory. And the kinetic term for the pion just vanish when the gravity coupling is sent to zero.
So excuse me, you started with a Lagrangian, which was just general coordinate invariant.
No. Oh, because this, when I add this positive masking, it explicitly breaks general
coordinate. But before you added that term, you started with just something general coordinate invariant. Then you added this term, and you say it's very important to maintain its shape. That is a relative weight.
That's true.
What would keep that?
At the quantum level, that's probably rigid. In general, you will generate different coefficients for this and this. But the point is, so a priori you will have a ghost. But the question is, what is the scale associated to the ghost? And actually, what you will see is that if you compute the cutoff associated with this term, you will get something that makes the the ghost, you wrote about them.
Below the couple.
Yeah.
If you
want, the ghost will be important above the cutoff scale, where you cannot trust your theory anymore.
Is this particular shape required so that you can have an expanding neural resolution? You have some functions. You have something like h squared, then h squared wants to be zero, right? H would have the possibility of.
And what you're trying to do here is if this has been a gauge theory, it's as if somebody gave you a mass term in unitary gauge and you're trying to reconstruct a covariant gauge, is that, as I understand
it? Yeah. Just to identify the relevant thing of the ghost of both.
So suppose why do it this way? I mean, why not just, it must be possible to write down the analog of the Kallikholm-Weissmann-Amino thing for general covariance. I mean, if you were to ask what were the ghost of bosons, I'd have to couple, just write them down and then couple them to gravity. Rather than trying to reconstruct it. I mean, just directly go to the covariant gauge rather than starting in a unitary gauge and working backwards.
I think it was kind of done
you can work in
theory for gravity changes.
So in the end of the day, are you going to get to the same place? So he ends up with a...
He didn't study what the application to acceleration, but...
You can study the system in any gate, you will find the same result. So
but you wouldn't have to talk about the ghosts then. The thing is if you did it in a covariant way, then the ghosts would all be dealt with.
Yeah, but then the computation of this kind of diagram for graviton would be really complicated. So the advantage of using the ghost on formalism is just that it's become easy to compute the scattering of graviton. This is just given by the scattering of this ghost on mode. This is very easy to estimate. So the dimensional analysis. I mean, it's just that doing this kind of computation for gauge theory in a unitary gauge is difficult computation.
Cancellation.
Just using.
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying working unitary gauge. I'm just trying to get a faster way to get to the covariant gauge without having to put in ghosts. I don't really understand what these ghosts are doing. But if it would have been done in a covariant way, then I would know what to do with the ghosts because they would just be gauge.
There is no ghost. There's just ghosts.
So they all go away in the end. So
the ghost and both? It just describes the physical longitudinal mode of the gravity. Like with the equivalent theorem in gauge theory. The nice thing about introducing this ghost on board here is just that you can really quickly estimate the scale for the spooking of this ghost on board self-interaction. So you can really quickly estimate the scattering of gravity. Now that I identified this kind of Lagrangian, I can canonically normalize my field and then identify the cooking of the interaction. So clearly, for this, the canonically normalized graviton, which is n plus h, is a canonically scalar field. And now if I want to estimate the self-interaction scale, for instance, I will have a term in my function which is just f to the 4 and p pi squared q. And then I just go into the canonically normalized field basis. So this is just f to the 4. And this just gives you basically one, the lambda 5, which is the scale at
which those interactions with this form got. So we just by identifying this, from the 5 to the 5.
But where does that come from? Come from? The
so just, we can see, just by using this
from the current
when zoom in or formalism, you will generate those kind of interaction from this term. Which if I'm writing it for dimensional space, that bit of yeah. With the graviton, if I go to the kinetically normalized basis, you get a term which is just F to the 4 divided by M power square. Kinetically normalized square. So the mass of the graviton is just easier. So here I can rewrite this scale in terms of the mass of the graviton on the Planck scale. The mass of the graviton of the 4 times the Planck. So this is a scale at which the gravitational interaction becomes 4 decoupled. In the same sense, that the gauge theory becomes strongly coupled at this scale. Here, if I introduce by hand a mass to the graviton, then gravity will become strongly coupled at this scale. So now you can ask why this is bad. So for that, you need to put numbers. And we know that, well, maybe Sheldon should have said, but the bound of the mass of the graviton is that its mass has to be lower than 10 to the 24 centimeters inverse. Just by galactic observation, you cannot modify the Newton potential at distance is shorter than this scale. So this is clearly the bound of the mass of the graviton. And then, from that, you will get that the cutoff of the gravitational theory
Hubble is 10 to the minus 30. Hubble is 10 to the
28. I don't know the exact number, but the point is that this is much below this 10 to minus 3 electron volts that you will need. So if you want, there is a problem in the sense that you cannot modify gravity in the infrared just by adding a mass term without modifying gravity into the ultraviolet. So you have
formally there's a window
There is a window
that doesn't work for long.
This is not compatible with experiment.
Okay.
There is no gravity between 1 millimeter, which is 10 to minus 3 electron volt, and basically this scale.
Sir, can I ask another question? In his talk of strings, Gia said that there is a strong coupling scale, but at least in some circumstances, corresponding nonlinear interactions can be summed up in some sense that you can find classical solutions of the resulting nonlinear equations, which you can understand and therefore push beyond.
Einstein effect.
I'm not sure what it's called. Enough.
Okay, let me discuss this Einstein effect later.
Okay, so this is still
possible. But this is just some nonlinear effect. Okay, just one remark is that somehow you can construct, hook up a theory where you will suppress those kind of operators just by some kind of fine tuning, in the sense that you will add some more term here beyond the, just the quadratic term, you will add some other term in h, in power of h, that may cancel this kind of term. And then you can ask, if I don't have this term, what is the strong cookie scale that I will generate? Or can I get a kind of scale which is bigger than this lambda pi scale? And the answer is yes, you can do that, but still there is a kind of bound where you cannot go beyond. What is this bound is also kind of easy to determine. So you can repeat the analysis just by looking at the motional kind of term that you can, motional kind of interaction that you can have. So you will have this geometric term for the scalar field, squared pi squared. And then you have also this kinetic term for the vector field. And then you can imagine some kind of interaction of these forms, f to the 4 times di to the p, p phi to the q. And then you repeat the analysis going into the canonically normalized field. Phi c just f to the 4 and m down times phi, and the canonically normalized vector just f squared I. Then from this you will read out the strong cooking scale. The strong cooking scale in this case is 3 q plus p minus 4 equals m plus plus q minus 2, and ready 2q plus p minus 2. And then you're asking yourself, what is the bigger scale that I can obtain here? And you will see that the bigger scale is just lambda by lambda 3, which corresponds to n gravitons squared times n plus 1 third. So this is a bigger scale for the cutoff that you can generate. And here, if you put the number, you will get that this corresponds to 10 to minus 12 electron volts. Also, in kilometers, this is 100 kilometers minus 1. So this means that you cannot modify gravity in the infrared without modifying gravity at distances smaller than 100 kilometers. And this is clearly excluded because we have measured gravity at distances smaller than 100 kilometers. So this was for the strong cooking scale in massive gravity. I can also discuss another effect, which is related to the Van Dam Beltman Sakharov discontinuity. So this discontinuity is very easy to understand also in this Goldstone formalism. When I'm trying to couple gravity to the stress energy tensor, and here you will see immediately this discontinuity. So let me couple graviton to source. So this is the kinetic term for the graviton. Then I have this kinetic thing for the graviton and the scalar field. And then I couple the graviton to stress energy tensor. And then I repeat my previous analysis going to the canonically normalized field. As we said, the canonically normalized graviton pick up also a little contribution which is coming from the scalar field. This goes for m times squared. So this is just m times h minus the canonically normalized scalar field. And so we can rewrite this interaction between the graviton, between gravity and the stress energy tensor. I will get something that goes like 1 over m plus, and the canonically normalized graviton plus
my scalar p times t.
And so you here you see immediately that whatever the mass of the graviton is, I will always modify gravity by some interaction of order one. So there is no decoupling of this scalar mode when I send the mass to zero. So this is just a big discontinuity.
Wasn't there also a story that at some intermediate distances you get ordinary gravity in the spin pool? But I think what you were saying here is that at extremely long distances you get one extra polarization. But there was also some state.
Well, that poor scale, this guy never decoupled, so.
He's asking the Einstein
question. Oh, the Einstein. So this is maybe it's a good point to discuss the Weinstein issue. So what Weinstein has noticed is that actually this kind of pro-coupling can help to solve the BDV discontinuity. So how is it working in the following? Weinstein effect, you will consider kind of the gravitational effect of a massive source. So you have here a big source of mass m, and you will ask yourself what kind of gravitational effect is created by this source, in kind of massive gravity. So for instance, you can try to compute the Schwarzschild solution associated to this source. So just looking at the mathematical solution for the metric that looks like this minus r dt squared plus dr squared plus r squared, the usual story. R squared d theta plus sine squared theta d phi. So for the massless case, you will just recover the usual Schwarzschild solution. So this function nu is just given by the logarithm 1 minus the Schwarzschild radius divided by r. And the Schwarzschild radius associated with this mass is just the Newton constant times the mass of the source. So you can expand it in terms of r. This is just r times of r minus 1 half r squared. And then you can repeat the same analysis in the massive case and find this function mu 2. And then you will get a kind of expansion in terms of the Newton constant. So the first term I read. And you have some deviation which are proportional to the Newton constant. So there is just a numerical coefficient and mass of the graviton to the 4 divided by r to the 5. And then there is some other term, the power of the Newton constant. And so the point is that this kind of expansion actually breaks down at a given distance, which is just the Weinstein scale, in the sense that all the other term in the expansion in term of G Newton will become important. And this scale, which is the scale where this becomes of order one, so this is the Weinstein scale, which is the mass of the graviton times the Schwarzschild radius is 1/5. By the mass of the graviton. So if you want to plot it here, you have this Weinstein scale here, and at distance below
expansion scale, then you have to take into account all the non-linearity on this expansion. And above this expansion scale, then you recover the usual linear solution. And the claim is somehow that those non-linearity effects can actually get rid of this discontinuity. In the sense that if you organize the expansion not in terms of power of the Newton constant, but in terms of the mass, you will get another expansion which doesn't exhibit this discontinuity, or VDVZ discontinuity. But of course, you have to deal with non-linear gravity.
So if you do an experiment in the lab between two masses, which is which one you should take?
I think it would be slow. I mean, the problem in the sense is that here you don't really have a fully theory of massive gravity. So nobody has really been able to provide a theory of massive gravity and explicitly compute those expansions all over. And there is also the problem.
So you say that this doesn't make sense for some reason. So you just write down the Lagrangian. I mean, in the context of that Lagrangian that you wrote before, these are solutions, right?
These are solutions, except that the way you found the solution is just, you know, you take the expansion of the Einstein term all over H, and you only keep the quadratic term from the mass term. So somehow you treat the Einstein term and the mass term, which different level in expansion of H. So what you can try is to find kind of continuation of this, or introduce some higher order in the power of H with the deviation of an Einstein, actually trying to find the solution. And this was done in particular by Damour and company, and they were unable to find a solution which exactly matched between the nonlinear regime and the linear regime. So far the claim is that there is no theory of massive gravity which really show a kind of continuous transition between the linear and nonlinear regime.
So one way of understanding that is that if I had done the Coleman Shannon Westamino thing to get my Goldstone bosons, that typically would have been a nonlinear Goldstone Lagrangian. And is one way to understand this discontinuity is that I just truncated that Lagrangian and not done the truncated mass in terms of
that.
But would that mean that the way you solve it is to put in all the nonlinear interactions in the...
That's a way to do it. But as I say, if you're doing that, then you don't find a continuous transition between the nonlinear and the linear regime.
Sorry, this
RSMB
is the same scale
you
had before.
Right, how can you
pay? No, I mean, it's kind of different because here it's a scale which is associated with the mass of the source. So before it was just an ultraviolet cutoff associated with the gravity itself. So here it's a scale of non-linearity associated to the source. But there is a way actually to make the connection between and this scale and also the previous analysis in terms of Goldstone model. So maybe at this point I should just come back to the value capital the Rati model and repeat the same kind of analysis to find the stroke looping scale in this model.
Or maybe you could give us the final answer.
Give you the final answer in the sense. So you will repeat the analysis and you will find this case. Stroke this scale. So in DGP, the cutoff scale of the model will just be given. Yeah, so let me repeat just the convention. So you will put a large kinetic term on the grain, and then you
have also kinetic bearings about Chabot-Lem. So this is our convention for those kinetic bearings. So M is just the five-dimensional Planck scale, and M Planck is just a four-dimensional Planck scale on the brain. And so the stroke hooking scale is just given by M5 to square divided by M down. And if you put the number here, you will also find a problem in the sense that if the mass of the graviton is associated, yeah, there is an effective mass for the graviton, I forgot to say that. Which is this number, then you will find that the cutoff scale of the DGP model is about 1 diameter. So here again, something which is excluded because we have measured gravity below 1 kilometer.
The string theory should tell us how to make a consistent theory that doesn't make a strong copy.
Sorry, so this window is pretty large,
right?
You're saying.
For what?
I mean, you don't miss by a huge amount.
Well, what you would like is to find that this is about 1 millimeter. That's, this is a cutoff which is experimentally allowed.
No, I understand that. So this experiment. Yeah, relative to this 60 or whatever between.
By analogy with what happens in a gauge theory, you'd be saying that the experimental limit on the graviton mass says that if you have an effective theory of the graviton alone at low energies, something new has to kick in at that scale to fix unitarity, but it could be gravitationally coupled, right? So is that ruled out? I mean, so why don't you just throw in some degrees of freedom at that scale, which are gravitationally coupled, and that's not necessarily going to be a problem.
Yeah, except that nobody has found one which is working.
I don't understand. I mean, if you measure this is shorter than this, but it's real thing would be important.
Well, so the question would be that when you put those degrees of freedom in, are they something which you see observationally in your measurements of gravity in the solar system? And
that would depend on the gravity in the lab. Let's say you measure the two masses 1 meter away, right?
And it would be strange to have a kind of UV completion that doesn't destroy
it. It'll depend what it couples to, right? It's like the standard model analog of that singularity problem would have been that the Goldstone boson, you know, the coupling limit doesn't decouple because it's coupling with the strength of the couplings and the potential rather than the gauge couplings. And so then if you imagined just doing a standard model analog of this question and you said that the new scale of physics was the existence of the Higgs particle, then the Higgs couples in a specific way, and whether you'd see it or not would depend on the Higgs couplings. So, and you wouldn't necessarily know what they are just knowing what the gauge couplings were. So I don't know if it's obvious that the fact that gravity, tests of gravity in the solar system have been done would mean that whatever the physics is you'd stick in would have not allowed to be any couplings. I mean, maybe it's true, but you're saying there's no model at all.
So far there is no model.
At the beginning, Cha mentioned that one of the motivations was the cosmology of the constant. Can you comment on that?
So people are thinking, for example, Wittenberg, the proceedings where he says that this could be interesting because you could have unbroken supersymmetry in the bulk in an infinite volume, and then broken supersymmetry on the brain, and then the breaking of supersymmetry on the bulk on the brain wouldn't feed into the bulk, and then somehow it would really be secretly because of supersymmetry that could solve the cosmological constant problem.
How well would you have to tune the tension mismatch between the negative tension brain and the positive tension brain? Would you have to tune it to one part and 10 to the 120?
Well, that's like in this DGP model, yes.
So when you see the problem come back, right?
Probably.
Plus this one. You can tame something down a little bit.
I mean, it's kind of strange theory to get localized gravity. I think it would be nice to have a string theory situation where you look at localized gravity. If you try to do it along this route where you have some brain and you have some large kinetic term for the gravity, and you normally have
You need a UV cutoff that's high on the brain and low in the bulk or something.
Yeah, that's right. And well, in normal string theory, there's the string scale, which is the same for both, for the open strings and the closed strings. And if you do get a induced chiotic comeback square root of GR, that you get it with a small coefficient. So smaller than the five dimensional point mass.
Did Carson Randall have some examples with the ADS puddings and ADS?
Well, they said, no, not really. So they had some examples of brains, some ADS brains inside ADS.
Yeah.
But they only considered in the probe approximation. In order to see this effect, you really need to consider the back reaction. So their brains were not divided into regions. Yeah, from that point of view, it seems that it should be possible. I mean, there's no, but those are more like a standard, I would say, one of those.
To me, the problem isn't so much consistency yet, but numbers.
But you should find, I mean, instead of this lambda phi scale, what you really should find is this lambda 2 scale, which you can graviton constant from square root. And this will give you 1 millimeter. And this will be the analog of just gauge theory, one of M partages. This would be the equivalent of gauge theory. Some of the gravity is working differently than gauge theory. So you don't get this kind of at most lambda phi.
Can you explain in a simpler way how is it that this type of modification allows you solutions with constant H? Is for something that I do by typically, right, you get constant H either by having a constant rho. Or if you add higher order terms, each to the four, there will be a solution of problem. That's the Starobinsky complex. So here I'm trying to classify your
if you have an age out, yes, if for some reason the brain is expanding, yes, then you get this brain in this curvature term that acts like a brain tension basically. And that's the self-sustained inflation. Yeah, in the DGP case.
So this would be what? It would be a linear term in H?
So, yeah, so it would be a linear term in H in the, yeah, so that's what I wrote down. Something like H squared is proportional to H over this crossover distance plus, you know, the stuff proportional to H. So that's why these people, Turner and Gia, wrote this paper with this generic modifications that result with this some alpha and look at the phenomenology.
And the reason that you get a linear H and not a constant is what?
Well, it's because we have this induced curvature term, yes, and that induced curvature term on the brain, you know, when A dot is non-zero, it's just acting like a constant for a constant H.